Hey, fellow believers. The sponsor of this episode is Coco Locks Boxes, a subscription box full of $120 or more worth of high-end hair care products. Their seasonal boxes are specially designed to include hair products for the specific season that you're in, spring, summer, fall, winter. They also have boxes for men, weddings, and lots of other offerings. A one-time purchase of a Coco Locks box is $85 plus tax for at least $120 value. If you subscribe to their seasonal boxes, you receive a 10% discount per box. They typically have things like shampoo and conditioner, styling products, thermal protectants, masks and deep conditioning treatments, hair accessories, hair tools like brushes, combs, and clips, and they also have at least one surprise from a random small business owner. Some surprises I've received in Coco Locks boxes in the past include nail polish, foot masks, discount cards, seeds for my garden in the spring box, and lots more. It's like giving yourself a gift bag full of presents that you can actually use. And we are talking high-quality brands like La Braziliana, Jungle Fever, SHRD, Color Reflections, and plenty more. Do your hair a favor and visit CactusHairSalonOH.com today or click the link in the show notes of this episode and click on Coco Locks box in their menu bar. Type spooky in the notes section during purchase to let them know that True Hauntings sent ya. Stay spooky! Welcome to True Hauntings and Scary Stories, where we alternate between spooky conversations and fictional scary stories. I'm your host, Cynthia Sear. You can reach me on Instagram at True Hauntings, Twitter at True Hauntings with a Z on the end, and my super fun Facebook group called True Hauntings. I'll put the link in the show notes. Check out some stories I haven't yet covered on this podcast, both fictional and true, on my blog, truehauntings.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome, fellow believers. Today we have a cool thing to talk about. We have Jeremy on, and he is with the Southern Specter podcast, and he is going to tell us about Florida spooky legends and creepy things. So welcome, Jeremy. Tell us about yourself.
Thank you so much. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here. And once again, thank you for allowing me to come on your show. It's an honor and a pleasure. Yeah, I have the Southern Specter podcast. You can find it on anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple, and most other places that you guys listen to. I kind of started out with Southern-based paranormal and kind of went from there. You know, I started over time, I started incorporating some true crime, some conspiracies, nice. Strange stories, folklore, legends, so on and so forth. And it just kind of, snowballing at this point.
That's awesome. That is all the creepy, weird things that we love to talk about. I don't know why it is that humans are so captivated with those weird, macabre things.
I think it's because it's something, it's so unexplored because, you know, everybody who's going into the cemetery, they're just dying to get in there. So,
Nice. I know, right? I love it. Just opening it up with a dad joke.
Exactly. That's something my father-in-law would say. But yeah, I think that's the case though. You know, that's why you have to go to these buildings. That's why you have to go to these mm-hmm. creepy old houses. That's why you have to hear these stories, because we can't go to the other side and come back and tell everybody about it. Although there are those who claim that they have, not discrediting their story by any means, but it's just not a normal walk down the sidewalk that we can all venture on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's intriguing.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the thing that we can't explain. Speaking of things that we can't explain, what have you got for us today?
All right. Well, I kind of switch things up on you, but I think I'm going to start with the legend of Spook Hill. Now, this one kind of intrigued me a little bit because now this actually took place in Lake Wales, which is a city over in Polk County, Florida. And yeah, it kind of interested me because this one was one of those things that it's kind of like one of those oddities that you come across, almost like a roadside attraction almost. But yeah, I'm going to start with that one and I'm going to read it to you. And you have to tell me what you think.
Awesome.
Okay. Spook Hill is located on 5th Street in Lake Wales, a city in Polk County. For years, signs have invited motorists to stop their car at a white line on what appears to be the bottom of a hill. Put their car into neutral and watch with terror as their car appears to creep its way back up the hill, as if moved by some unseen force. Ask most folks who study such phenomena, and they'll tell you it's all an optical illusion, that the unique pattern of changes in elevation along 5th Street plays a trick on your eyes, making it seem as though you're at the bottom of a hill when you're actually at the top. But is this really what's happening? Many locals have offered much creepier explanations over the years. A popular restaurant in Lake Wales called Barney's Tavern was kind enough to publish a leaflet in the 1950s explaining the, quote, real story behind Spook Hill. According to this legend, it all began when a Spanish pirate named Captain Give Me Sarsaparilla decided to hang up his cutlass and retire to Lake Wales. He was joined by fellow pirate Tennant Vanilla, whose surname was an acronym for a much larger mouthful of a name, Vincento Alfredo Nieto Isidoro Lima Lano Alvarez.
I am so glad that you are reading that and not me.
We'll stick with Tennant Vanilla for now.
Indeed.
According to the good folks at Barney's, when Vanilla died, he was buried at the foot of Spook Hill. Captain Sarsaparilla, for whatever reason, ended up nearby at the bottom of the lake for which Lake Wales is named. All was well for a couple of centuries, but then one day, in the early years of the automobile age, a man decided to park his car right at the bottom of Spook Hill and go fishing. The car, which the crew at Barney's estimated to be approximately the weight of 16 men, was parked directly over the grave of the long-forgotten Tennant Vanilla. And you know what they say about pirates and 16 men on a dead man's chest. This was not bound to end well. Vanilla, his rest now disturbed, was said to have called out to his old friend Captain Sarsaparilla, who emerged from his watery tomb in Lake Wales and pushed the unlucky fisherman's car up the hill and off of the dead man's chest. And legend says that's what will happen to your car as well if you dare to stop at the bottom of Spook Hill as that fisherman once did. Now, that's not the only explanation that has been put forward to explain this chilling peculiarity. At some point, local tourism promoters put forward a completely different legend involving a struggle between a Native American chieftain and a particularly bothersome alligator. Someone else proposed a theory involving an underground lode acting as a magnet that draws automobiles up the hill. So, like I said, this was a bit of an oddity to me.
Yeah.
Because, it seems like, this restaurant, now, don't get me wrong, this is an actual legend, but it just seems like this restaurant, this tavern in town was taking advantage of the local tourism to actually maybe bring in guests to their restaurant. I found it very whimsical almost, but also on the same hand, it was odd. I had never heard a story like that before. And I don't know. I'm like, are they trying to use a ghost, a ghost story or a local legend as a bit of promotion, self-promotion?
Yeah. I thought I had never heard of that. But once you started reading it, I have heard of that Spook Hill thing where cars go up the hill or whatever. Yeah, right. I have heard of that.
Awesome.
A while back, but yeah.
I think, could be me, but I think some of the other states surrounding here, South Carolina, North Carolina, there's probably something in Georgia that have something similar as well.
Yeah, I think so. I think I've heard of another one in another state, like in a national park or something. Gosh, I can't remember now, but it's some kind of cabin and it feels like you're standing off balance or something.
Oh yeah, I've actually been to one that way. It's up in North Carolina. It's up above. It's below the town of Boone. And I'm trying to. I know where you're talking about. I've been to one. It was known as the Mystery Spot, And you know, if you stand in a specific spot in the house, it looks like you're actually standing, you know, vertical on the wall. But the place you're referring to, I think that's out in California somewhere, because one of the big Redwood National Forests out there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's where it is. I read it somewhere, but yeah. Yeah, those are cool. That's neat. Optical illusion, or maybe not. I don't know. Maybe pirates. That's a big jump from optical illusion to pirates.
Oh, I definitely agree.
I don't know. Strange
nonetheless.
Yeah.
All right. So now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to get into the meat and potatoes of why you called me here today. This is the story and a little bit of history behind the St. Augustine Lighthouse.
Nice. My hometown.
In 1589, an Italian mapmaker by the name of Giovanni Battista first published a map that showcased the raid of Sir Francis Drake 3 years prior. This map is the first known reference to a wooden watchtower located at the end of Anastasia Island. These watchtowers were built by the Spanish during the construction of Castillo de San Marco to aid in keeping enemies from taking over the island. By 1737, the Spanish had replaced the wooden watchtower with a new 30-foot tower made of shell rock and wood. After the end of the French and Indian War, Florida was ceded to Great Britain. It was divided into East and West Florida. The British would build onto the watchtower, adding to its height with an additional 30 feet of wood construction. In 1764, a French map detailing the waters and landscape surrounding St. Augustine marks the lighthouse on the island as a balise, which means signal or mark. The map marks the lighthouse with a smoke signal, notating this was a warning to ships to beware the rocks. This, however, did nothing to improve the shipwrecks. New Year's Eve, 1782. 16 ships wrecked during a terrible storm as they were all trying to enter the harbor. In 1783, Florida was now ceded back to Spain with the signing of the Treaty of Paris. The Spanish quickly destroyed the wooden construct on top of the watchtower and reinforced it with shell rock. The lighthouse had been restored back to a simpler watchtower. By 1822, French engineer Jean Fresnel had finally finished his lens, known as the Fresnel lens. Due to the cost of these lenses, the U.S. Treasury was slow to come around to purchasing. To compensate, the watchtower was raised an additional 10 feet, but by 1853, the St. Augustine Watchtower had been outfitted with a new Fresnel lens, and a lard oil lamp that burned whale oil was used as its light. During the Civil War, Confederates removed and hid the lens, along with specific mechanisms to block Union shipping. After the war, however, the American government relit the light in 1867. Due to the surmounting erosion around the lighthouse and the island, Congress awarded $100,000 for a new lighthouse, and construction began in 1871. Hezekiah Pitti relocated his family from Maine to Florida to oversee the construction of the new lighthouse. After all, Hezekiah was the superintendent of the lighthouse construction. Hezekiah and his wife, Mary, along with their children, Mary Adelaide, Eliza, Edward, and Carrie, moved to Florida. As with most children, the Pitti children were always looking for a bit of fun. So the Pitti children began playing around the construction yard, transforming it into their own personal playground of sorts. Soon they would begin inviting other children from the area to join in on the fun as well. By 1873, the foundation of the 160-foot lighthouse was complete, as well as the first 42 feet. A railway cart had been built to assist in the moving of supplies from the docks to the construction site. The Pitti children would climb aboard the rail cart and ride it as far as it could go as if the rail cart were a roller coaster. They would push the cart back to its starting point and do it all over again. A single wooden board had been placed on the end of the track to keep the cart from going over the edge and into the water. On July 10, 1873, the Pitty sisters Mary, Eliza, and Carrie, along with an unknown friend, whose father is believed to have worked on the construction of the lighthouse, were all riding along the makeshift roller coaster just like any other day. The board at the end of the track that kept the cart from splashing into the ocean was missing for whatever reason. The girls boarded the cart, and instead of stopping where they normally would have, they ended up in the water with the cart pinning them underneath. One of the African-American construction workers by the name of Dan Sessions noticed the tragic accident that had occurred. He raced toward the scene as fast as his legs could carry him. Once he reached the cart, he used his raw muscular strength to lift the cart. There he found three of the four girls had already drowned. The only survivor was the youngest Pitty sister, Carrie, who was only four at the time. The construction on the lighthouse was halted in observance of the girls and to proceed with their funerals. After their funerals, the Pitty girls were sent back to Maine to their final resting place, but it's unclear where their friend had been buried. Over the years since the construction of the St. Augustine Lighthouse and Lightkeeper's Home was completed, several stories have emerged from those that claim they had a paranormal encounter. Here are a few of their stories. Sometime back in the 1950s, a relief lighthouse keeper who was living in the home at the time had reported hearing footsteps from upstairs. The keeper went to take a peek to investigate, but no one was there. Head lighthouse keeper at the time, James Pippin, who started out sleeping in the keeper's house but eventually moved to the smaller Coastal Outlook building, swore that, quote, the big house was haunted and he would not stay another night in it. By 1955, the lighthouse had been made fully automatic, and so the Coast Guard did away with the position of lighthouse keeper and replaced it with lamplighter. The lamplighter had the same responsibilities and duties as the lighthouse keeper, only they did not live on site. Because of this, the keeper's house had been rented out, and at the time, it was being rented by a local man who made and sold handcrafted leather goods. He swore that one night he awoke to see a small girl standing at his bedside. He blinked his eyes, and she was gone. In 1970, after being uninhabited for years, the keeper's house burned under mysterious circumstances, leaving only the basement and a few wooden beams. Due to safety concerns, the county wanted to demolish the remains, but 16 women from the Junior Service League of St. Augustine stepped in and raised enough money over a 15-year period, $1.2 million to be exact, to have the keeper's house restored and renovated. Due to the incredible amount of money that was raised, they also restored the lighthouse tower as well as the original Fresnel lens. The building was soon added to the National Register of Historic Places. It was during the renovation process that construction workers and volunteers reported a number of strange occurrences. Most claimed that the basement was most definitely the active location. Now it's believed that the girls are very playful and enjoy playing with guests and staff. One night in the lighthouse tower, a staff member for the now Lighthouse Museum was closing up for the night. He claims to have heard giggling coming from the top of the tower. Afraid he had left a guest behind, he quickly ascended the stairs only to find no one. That's when he heard the giggling again. But this time, it was coming from below him, somewhere at the bottom of the lighthouse. He made his way to the bottom, but there, once again, was no one. Another night, one guest who was taking a tour of the lighthouse was standing on the first step to the metal lighthouse stairs. When she attempted to walk away, she was shocked to find that one of her shoelaces had been tied to the staircase.
That's creepy as crap.
Oh, you should go see the Ghost Hunters episode where they, what they called on that one.
I think I saw that one, but it was years ago. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah, it was years ago. And I think they went back here in probably the past 5 years or better. I think they just recently went back.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, if you look it up online, they're at the bottom of the tower. And when they look up, because they kept hearing something, you know, like somebody talking or whispering. And it was almost like that situation I just read. They heard something up top. They went up top, couldn't find anything. They heard something at the bottom, went down to the bottom, couldn't find anything. And then one of the guys said they swore up and down that they heard somebody talking about halfway up the stairs, and they hollered up to it and shined the camera up there. And when they did, you could see like a shadow person lean over the side and look at them.
Ooh.
Yeah. That gave me chills the first time I saw it.
Wow. Listen, I have a friend who I went to high school with who actually works there currently. Mm-hmm. And she told me that people are always using those EKG things or whatever. I don't not EKG.
Is it the EMF or the
EMF?
EKG?
Yeah, yeah. EMF. The thing that you hold and it gets the electromagnetic field or whatever. She said they're always using it in the bathroom, but she said they constantly have to tell people there's a power box right behind the mirror in the bathroom. So everybody swears the mirror in the bathroom is haunted, but it's not.
Yeah, that's
there's a power box back there.
That's the next portion. I'm about to, the next section I have to tell about it.
Oh, no.
It's fine. But yeah, they go into that, you know, with the EMF detector, and I thought it was pretty interesting.
And they find stuff behind the mirror.
This one here doesn't mention a mirror.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But this one says, during another night tour, a guide discovered that one guest in the group had brought along an EMF detector. Imagine that. For those unfamiliar, an EMF detector measures electrical activity, which some people believe can be affiliated with ghosts and spirits. The woman began talking to the ghosts of the girls and began asking questions. She asked if they would like to play hide and seek. It's at this point that the EMF detector spiked. The woman then began roaming about the basement in an attempt to seek out the girls. When she made her way beneath the spiral staircase, the EMF detector spiked again, signaling that she had found the girls. She asked the girls if they would like to play again. The EMF reader spiked. After searching for quite a while, she was able to capture another spike near the children's play table, signaling she found them once again. Shortly after, some other guests made their way to the basement, and this is where the communication was broken. On one tour during the day, a guest had been investigating the maritime hammock trails and soon found herself face to face with a young girl in a Victorian-style outfit, sitting on a bench, reading a book. Just as the woman was going to ask the girl a question, more guests made their way down the path. The guest looked back toward the oncoming guests for only a moment. When she turned back to face the young girl, she had completely vanished. In a similar occurrence, one guest approached another to compliment her on how well-behaved her daughter was. Confused, the woman claimed that she had no daughter. That's when the others in the group told her that a very well-behaved little girl had been at her side most of the night. There were no children on the tour that night. If that's not enough for you, Sci-Fi Ghost Hunters captured a video of someone or something peering over the staircase railing at them on their first investigation to the St. Augustine Lighthouse. And that is that one. But yeah, that's always been a favorite of mine. A place I definitely would love to visit.
I mean, the last time I I went to the top of that lighthouse was in the middle of the day. My husband and I were in town visiting family because we live in Ohio now. Mm-hmm. And we didn't see anything. I didn't feel anything, but I should confess that I have a fear of heights, and I purposefully climbed to the tippy top to try and, you know, face my fears or whatever. So the last thing on my mind was ghosts. The only thing I was thinking of is let's not fall to our deaths. But it's beautiful.
Oh, imagine. So any place near the beach like that, you know, you got the Gulf on one side and, you know, oh man.
I had no idea how haunted it was as a kid. Like I have cousins that lived right down the street practically from that lighthouse. So I saw it all the time.
Wow.
It, to me, it's just normal. But then you see all these shows that go and investigate it and all this stuff, you know. I used to work on St. George Street in downtown St. Augustine in one of the little shops. And that place is just about as haunted as any place in the whole world.
Wow.
But I didn't think anything of it.
Yeah, you never do, at, you know, at the time when, you know. Yeah. Then later on, you know, you get to hearing stories and then you start putting two and two together.
Yeah, my grandparents' house is in St. Augustine and it's wicked haunted. I talk about it all the time. But as a kid, I was way more brave. Now I'm an adult and I would not do half the things that I did in their house.
It's funny because I've actually listened to a few of your episodes and you were talking about a lot of the EVP that you have called over the years. And it's funny because me and my kids had actually helped out a friend of the family recently as this person had to go into the hospital and was not able to take care of their small dog. So my kids and I would ride over that way and we would, you know, make sure every morning, every evening that the dog was taken care of. And we were in there and it's a very creepy home, in my opinion. And I've always heard stories. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take my recorder. So we took out my recorder and, you know, kind of messed around. One of us was recording audio. The other was recording video. And as we were going around, the first thing I'll say, I was actually standing at the back door looking through the kitchen into the living room, and I could have swore I seen something, call it a flick of the light or just something that I couldn't get my eyes to meet before it vanished. But it looked like something peeking around the corner at me from the living room, and I was like, uh-oh, that's not good. But unfortunately, I was the only one to see that. But with our recording, we actually caught something because I compared it back to the video. You cannot hear anything in the video that remotely sounds like what it does on audio. And it actually sounds, you can hear me speaking in the audio. And the next thing you know, it sounds like someone running away, but in like bedroom slippers or flip flops. And I said, nobody had either one of those on that night. So I'm not quite sure.
Oh, wow. That's creepy. Did you tell the homeowner about it?
Unfortunately, I have not had a chance to do so yet as they are still a little bit under the weather.
Oh, well, that's creepy. So the house is kind of known to be haunted by them? You said you heard stories?
Yeah, I've heard stories mainly from my wife and her brother. My wife, brother-in-law, and father-in-law, and they say that they have always had to deal with things in that home. What the actual backstory on the home is, I have yet to discover, but I do intend to kind of begin, you know, walking that path to try and figure out what I can find out. So,
yeah,
I know it has been reported, and I actually saw it because my son showed it to me, but up at the very top, there's an old rocking chair, and they say that the rocking chair has a tendency to rock on its own.
Ooh, I knew you were going to go there.
Don't they all? I mean, everybody, you know,
every good ghost story has an old rocking chair.
Who doesn't love a rocking chair?
Right? You know what? If I'm a ghost someday, I'm totally finding a rocking chair.
Exactly.
I have one in my house. I'm going to use it.
There you go. Then, you know, you put it out wherever you go to investigate, put it out and put a sign on it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, feel free to
Welcome. Have a ghost. Seat. I told my husband that if I die before him, at first it was a joke and I told him I was going to leave pennies all over the floor and that's how he would know I was there. But then he ticked me off one day and I was like, you know what? I am going to flick those pennies at your forehead. That's how you'll know I'm there.
It's funny. Yeah, just sitting up there watching TV. Flick, ding. What was that? But it's funny you mentioned the pennies and leaving the pennies behind is me and the wife actually, let's see, when was that? That was here at the back at the beginning of June. We actually took a little bit of an anniversary trip to Savannah, Georgia, and we went to the 1790 Inn. And we stayed in the supposed most haunted room there in the hotel. And the story is that this young girl who is very, you know, as with most ghost stories, there's a number of variations that go along with it. So you got one variation where it says that she was a young girl. She was in love with a sailor from the sea. And that, but of course, he was in love with, you know, being a sailor and being out on the sea. And when he left her behind one day, you know, telling her that, you know, he wasn't coming back, she ended up throwing herself out of the second floor window. And then there's another variation where saying that she was actually supposed to be married, like arranged marriage almost, to someone else who she had no feelings for, and that her true love was a sailor. And when the guy she was arranged to be married to had found out, some say she was pushed. Others say she jumped to free herself from that scenario. And so we stayed there at the hotel, beautiful hotel, really loved it. Restaurant, bar, all that good stuff. You really couldn't ask for more. One of the spirits that is actually on the ground floor of the hotel is a little boy, and I think they said his name was Thaddeus. He has a tendency to leave dimes and pennies all over the, you know, the main floor there, throughout the restaurant and the bar area. They said the staff will actually come across different pennies just all over the place. So I thought that was it.
Cool. Well, you know, if he's going to leave something, go for the dimes. Quarters are better. Absolutely. We can just fill our pockets from the ghost. But my question is, where does the ghost get them from? You know what I mean?
Probably somebody's penny bank that, you know, somebody's missing pennies from a block up the street. And, you know, hey, where's all my pennies? I've been saving that.
Yeah.
Who spends pennies anymore?
My husband and I, we stayed in an inn in St. Augustine that is the St. Francis Inn. And that one is supposed to be super haunted. And I actually requested the most haunted room in the inn, which is Lily's room. So if you ever want to stay there and get haunted, Lily's room will do it for you, probably, because it did me.
That's funny, because that was my backup story.
Is it really? Tell it. Yeah, it That's is. Perfect, because I have experience there.
So, all right, I'm going to read it just as it is. So this is the St. Francis Inn Bed and Breakfast. St. Augustine, being America's oldest city, has a colorful history of four centuries and many legends of ghostly figures. Some believe that the ghost of a young house servant haunts St. Francis Inn. She has become known as Lily, and strange happenings reported in one third floor inn room lead to it being named Lily's Room. A story is told of a young man who lived with his uncle, Major William Hardy, who owned the inn during the middle of the 19th century. He fell in love with Lily, one of the young black servant girls, believed to have been a beautiful slave woman from Barbados, and they would sneak into rooms of the inn to carry on their secret love affair. When the uncle, a military officer, walked in on the lovers, he dismissed the servant and ordered his nephew to never see her again. The nephew, deeply depressed, killed himself, some say by hanging himself in the attic. Now Lily's room, others say by jumping from the third floor window. For years, inn guests and employees have reported apparitions of the ghost in Lily's room and in other parts of the inn. Some have seen her passing in the hall, all dressed in white. Maybe she returns to find her lover. One housekeeper tells of listening to MTV on the television while cleaning Lily's room. When she returned from getting clean sheets in the hall, the television was turned off. She jokes, Lily didn't like MTV. Interesting phenomena have been reported by guests about Lily and her soldier lover. A woman staying in Lily's room was awakened by a loud noise and woke to find the contents of her pocketbook scattered across the floor. Nothing was missing, and she said the thud was too loud to have been merely the sound of the purse falling. A guest found her cosmetic bag full of water, while another found her makeup bag under an open window had stayed completely dry while the driving rain had soaked everything around it. A male guest found himself under the bed when he woke in the morning and had to get help to free himself.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness.
That did not happen to us.
Jump up out of the bed and hit your head on the bottom.
Yeah, that is rude.
That is creepy. In another occurrence, a new bride was awakened by a passionate kiss, then surprised to find her husband was sleeping soundly beside her. Other reports include sightings of a hand on the railing of the back stairs, a ghosted figure dressed in white passing in the halls, split-second sightings of spirits. Say that three times fast.
I can't.
Frequent sounds of whispering and moans, lights and coffee makers going on and off, unassisted, radio stations being changed as witnesses watched, locked doors found open, shower water which comes out hotter and hotter no matter how much cold is added, falling books, moving pictures, icy cold touches, covers being removed, and female and male apparitions. Some psychics who have been to the inn conclude that Lily and her lover have not been united in the afterlife within the inn they haunt. Was it the resident ghost who caused a disturbing evening for another guest? He and his wife were staying at the inn, but in a room other than Lily's room. His wife fell asleep quickly, but he had trouble. A strange sensation overcame him suddenly, which he said felt like someone was entering his consciousness without seeming either good or evil. He left the room to see if a short walk would help, then returned to bed only to have the same feeling, and he attempted to allow it to become stronger. After what he thought was a long time, he shook off the feeling and went for another walk and some coffee, finally returning and able to fall asleep. Fortunately, the recalled paranormal events at St. Francis Inn have been described as friendly, though sometimes mischievous, but not harmful. Many describe their apparitions as being pleasant, not disturbing. Many guests are attracted by the possibility of a ghostly encounter. And then it goes into some of the findings here on paranormal investigations. It says a number of ghost hunters have visited St. Francis Inn and reported happenings indicating several spirits inhabiting the inn. Marlene Blanchard, an investigator with Left Field Paranormal Studies and Investigations, conducted several studies of paranormal activity at St. Francis Inn with positive results, including visual phenomena recorded on video. The report included a video camera being turned off, a pocket watch stopping at the exact time the video camera stopped, cell phone not able to hold its charge in the suite, still cameras photographing multiple orbs, and repeated knocking, rapping heard with source not able to be located. Also reported in this study, approximately, this is what it says, this is a word for word quote, but it says, approximately 2:15 a.m., a tall, slender Hispanic male, dark, wiry hair pulled back into a short ponytail, dressed in a white silky shirt and dark trousers, appeared on the left side of the room. He paced back and forth in the space between the bed and the dressing table from the window to the open door leading to the sitting room. He exited the door leading into the sitting room. An older male dressed in brown with a brown tri-cornered hat appeared from the left side of the room, walked on through to the sitting room, neither seemed to be aware of the two people in the bed.
Well, this is a super funny story. So let me tell you what happened with us.
Okay.
So we married really young, and my husband does not believe in the paranormal at all. Like, none. We are polar opposites in that respect. So back when we first got married, he was going to turn 21. So I decided I am going to prove to him that ghosts are a thing. So I found out what the most haunted inn in St. Augustine was alleged to be, and it was the St. Francis Inn. And I booked the most haunted room, which was Lily's room. That's what they call it there. So I didn't tell him that part. So we go there and it's, oh, honey, it's so sweet, blah, blah, blah. So the night that we stayed was his birthday, and it happened to be a Monday, and he's into wrestling, right? So he watches wrestling, super romantic, I know. And I, guys, right? So no offense. I fell asleep while he was watching wrestling. So at some point, so he went to bed when wrestling was over, but I don't remember that. So at some point, I like to sleep with the covers up by my neck, and I like kind of snuggle mm-hmm. in, you know? So at some point I wake up slightly, like half awake, because the covers are down. Now, looking back on it, I believe that they were being pulled off of me, but I was half asleep, and I can't confirm it. But I do remember stirring, and I remember grabbing the covers, pulling them back up onto me, and turning over to my side, like facing away from my husband. So my back was to him. So then, just moments later, as soon as I pull them up and turn over and get comfy again, it felt like someone slapped the back of my neck. It felt like a hand, pow, on the back of my neck.
Hmm.
Instantly awake at that point. So I flip over onto my back, and I'm like wide-eyed looking around, because my back was to him and he's fast asleep snoring next to me. Nothing wakes him up. So I'm laying there. Now, when I booked this room, I asked them about the haunting and stuff, and they told me a couple of things. What they told me, this was back in 1999 when this happened, February. Mm-hmm. So they told me that a cleaning lady got trapped in the bathroom for 3 hours, and there's no lock on the door. They told me that she went into the bathroom to clean, and that the door shut, and they could not get it open for 3 hours. And when it did finally open, it just opened. And she was able to get out. Like, it just unlocked all of a sudden. But there's no lock on it.
My word.
So I had that story in my brain, okay? And then they told me that the ghost likes to mess with makeup, which is mentioned in your story. So I guess that's true. So what I did was I took all my makeup and I put it in a Ziploc bag, like a big gallon size one, and I put it on the opposite side of the room on a chair as far away from the bed as possible. So I figured if they're going to mess with my makeup, maybe I can catch that or see it or whatever. So I did that. So here I am. I just got slapped on the back of my neck and I'm freaked out and I'm laying there. And then I realize I can hear something, like a noise. So I'm like trying to figure it out. And I kind of peek up above the covers because I'm scared out of my mind. And I can see from the moonlight coming in from the window that that bag is moving. Mm-mm. And I realized the sound I'm hearing is that bag rustling, that Ziploc bag of makeup. So I was like, great. So then I'm laying there. Okay. So I fell asleep by accident. So I did not like prep for bed. So I'm laying there and suddenly realize I have to pee so bad. So I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't want to get up. Like, something is in here freaking out. So I'm trying to wake him up and he is not waking up. He could sleep through a tornado. So he's like moans something and turns over. And I'm like, honey, there's a ghost in here. And he thinks I'm crazy. So I finally get him to turn on the light. It's like a dimmer switch. So he like turned it on a little bit. And so what I did was I got out of bed. And they had a big armchair beside the bathroom. And so I pulled that. I scooched it over so it was blocking the bathroom door open. So I like put the door open, put the chair fully in front of it. And I'm like, if this ghost is going to lock me in here, it's going to have to try real hard, you know? So then I go into the bathroom, right? And I mean, not to be graphic, but I was hovering over that toilet in full runner stance. Like, if I hear the slightest noise, I am peeing all over this bathroom. I do not care. Because I am not getting locked in there.
Sometimes you got to be ready to break camp.
Yes. Dude, I was ready. So I managed to pee. I'm happy to report there was no accidents. So I get back into bed and get settled in or whatever. And basically, I didn't go back to sleep. I spent the whole rest of the night listening to that bag of makeup across the room rustle every now and then. Like, it would stop for a while and then it would start again. Oh, my good night. So then I tell my husband and he doesn't believe me. And then he gets mad at me because he said it was, I had an ulterior motive, that it wasn't really celebrating his birthday. And, you know, I guess I could see his point. So I call the place and I tell them what happened to me. And do you know what that lady said to me on the phone? She said, "Oh, well, honey, that ghost only haunts women."
What?
I was like, well, that would have been good information to have, like, before I booked this room. That's the exact opposite of what I was looking for. Oh, do you have a room that haunts men? Because that's the one I need. Oh, my goodness. So that's my story.
That room that we actually stayed in was the one, I think that's the one that Miley Cyrus had actually stayed in years ago now. She was coming through town, and I think they had a last minute, original hotel she was supposed to be staying at. They kind of canceled on her for whatever reason, and they ended up going there to stay. And when she did, because it's believed that Anna had, you know, does a lot, you know, messes a lot with women as well as the men, moves the woman's jewelry about, messes with their clothes, hides things from them, so on and so forth. But yeah, she actually said like some of her boots went missing and she didn't, you know, she knew she put them in the closet or beside the bed and then found out that they were in the closet or vice versa. She put them in the closet and they were under the bed. And, you know, it was just, I said, wow, that's crazy. So we're like, yeah, let's go. Let's stay. We enjoyed it, but I'm like, I slept fine other than the fact that I just don't sleep well when I do stay away from home because it's not my bed.
Yeah.
but other than that, yeah. We had a good time. We enjoyed that. And I've always enjoyed Savannah. And I think those are, you know, three cities in my opinion that remind me, of each other almost. You have Savannah, Georgia, then you have St. Augustine, and then you have New Orleans. And I've heard a lot of people that say New Orleans and Savannah are a lot alike, even though I've never been to New Orleans. But you know, I would definitely a trip to plan.
Wow. Now, my first question would be, who cancels on Miley Cyrus? Like, who does that?
That's what I'm wondering, too.
Surely you can cancel somebody else.
Exactly. But not unless they had some kind of, you know, maybe that wasn't the story, but I'm not sure what the mix up was. But yeah, they said she had come in and stayed. It was like a late night or whatever, and she had no place to stay for whatever reason. So
yeah,
I just can't believe that nobody would have a room ready for Miss Cyrus.
I'd love to go to the Myrtle Plantation, I think it's called. Yeah, that's on my paranormal bucket list.
Oh, goodness.
Places I want to go.
I actually did an episode on the Myrtle's Plantation. I'm trying to think of the name of the girl that, is it Chloe? Chloe,
yeah. That's the one. Yep. Yeah, she pulled family, right?
Well, yeah, that's the story anyway. But yeah, if some of the stuff I read on it, you know, it's interesting. I'll say that because even before she came along, there was a lot of stuff going there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's on my bucket list.
I just think the house and the land surrounding it has a lot of dark history to it.
Yeah. Myrtle's Plantation. Isn't that in Louisiana?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to go there. I want to go to Salem. I want to go to Gettysburg. Yeah. All the haunted places. Even though I'm actually from a haunted town, you know. I've been there, seen it.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to go check out the Lizzie Borden house myself. Yes.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Do you think she did it?
I have no idea.
I think she did it.
I mean, yeah, I mean, because in today's society, they would be like, you're the only one not dead, so.
Right?
Well, that's that Sherlock Holmes, you know, power of deduction.
Indeed. Well, I have really enjoyed your stories, and
I appreciate it, and I enjoyed being here.
I can't believe you talked about the inn we stayed in. That's so funny. I love it. Well, real quick before we go, tell our listeners how to find you if they want to contact you or check out your stuff.
Yeah, if I'm open to hear anybody's story that you have a story to share with me, feel free to send it to me. You can reach out to me at thesouthernspectrepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow me along on Instagram. Follow me at The Southern Spectre. Also on Facebook at The Southern Spectre Podcast. And yeah, I'm on, like I said before, I'm on anchor.fm/Southern Spectre. You can find me on Spotify, Apple, also on Amazon, as well as, Pandora. Yeah, I'm also on Pandora.
Nice. Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, for talking with us today. And you guys all know where to find me. TrueHauntings.com will get you pretty much wherever you want to go. So until next time, we'll spook you later. I hope you enjoyed today's show. We at True Hauntings and Scary Stories always want to provide a great listening experience and some good entertainment. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can always email me at cynthia@truehauntings.com. Visit patreon.com/truehauntings to find bonus episodes and other goodies to choose from. Thank you for listening, and we'll spook you next week.